In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Kul sanah wa tayyibin, and many happy returns for the Feast of St. Mary. So, this past 2 weeks, we've been talking about the passions, which is all the things that are separating us from God, all the temptations that we have, the patterns of weaknesses and temptations that kind of keep us distracted and focusing on different things. They're an obstacle to us from getting closer to God, and we've been talking about how we should be fighting and struggling against them. And St. Mary is a perfect example of a human being, like what Abuna was just saying, of someone who conquered all of the passions. She was a person who, when we look in her life, we don't see any passions at all. We see that she was completely, you know, subjected herself to God in every way. St. Ambrose, he said, Mary was such that her life alone was a model for all. Let the virginity and life of Mary be to you as a faithful image in which the form of virtue is resplendent. Thus learn how to live, what to correct, what to avoid, and what to retain. So the reason that we want to speak about St. Mary is because we want to obtain what she obtained. We want to have what she had, and we want that God to look upon us the way that he looked upon her, because of her purity and her righteousness. That's why St. Ambrose says, thus learn how to live, what to correct, what to avoid, and what to retain. So before we start speaking about the specific virtues of St. Mary, we should take a step back and think, why are we studying the saints at all? What is the reason that we care about the saints? Why do we are interested in the lives of the saints? A lot of times people are interested for the wrong reasons in the life of the saints. Maybe sometimes we're interested to hear about miracles, different miracles that were done, and we're fascinated by the different miracles and the different things that were done, and we're astonished that these things could have happened. And maybe we glorify God in the miracles. But in some sense, the more we read about the miracles, the more we feel like the saint who is doing these miracles is somehow very different from us, because we're not able to perform miracles the way that the saints do. Or maybe sometimes we study the saints in terms of a history lesson. Like, this is something from the Synaxarium that I want to read and understand. These are the saints of the church and all their history. But actually, I came up with three reasons really why we should be studying the saints. One is to understand what God actually asks us to do. Because when we read the Bible gives us the words of what it is that we're supposed to do, but we oftentimes interpret it in a way that we think is practical for the type of life that we have now. And we kind of tone down and water down the commandments of God based on our understanding of what we as human beings are capable of doing. But when we look at the examples of the saints, we see that the standard that they lived was far, far higher than the standard that we aspire to and the standard that we think is possible. So by looking at the saints, we learn that virtue and righteousness is actually possible, that this level of holiness is actually possible for us while we're still in the flesh. Let me give you an example. In Matthew 5, Christ said, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." It's very nice to read it, and it's something we can teach in Sunday school, and we learned it in Sunday school. But in practice, in a real situation, we think to ourselves, this is not practical. If somebody is forcing me against my will to do something, am I going to do it and then also do more than what they asked? Or if they strike me on one cheek, am I going to give them the other cheek? Or if they want to take my clothes, am I going to give them more than what they even asked to take? This is why actually the difference between us and the saints is the saints, they took the commandment of God in the very literal sense, and they did exactly what the command of God was, and sometimes it went even beyond what God had asked. And we make many excuses of, you know, why it is that we don't do the same. But the saints are a testament to kind of judge us, to say, no, this is possible. It is possible for us, even in the flesh, to do this. The second reason that we study the saints is to see the holiness that can actually be achieved by human beings. Okay, sometimes we think that maybe the saints are special in some way, like they had something that we don't have. They had some DNA that we don't have that's allowing them to be the way that they are, and we don't have this. But actually, this is wrong, because we are all called to sainthood. The goal of each of us should be to acquire sanctity, that we should be pure and righteous. Not thinking about miracles and these things that, you know, we oftentimes focus on, but instead wanting to be holy, even if it is hidden from the world,
Even if nobody sees what we are doing, even if only God is the one who sees, instead of seeking recognition or seeking to be seen, that we want God Himself to praise us, that we want God to be pleased with us. So holiness can be achieved by human beings. This is the second reason we study this, the lives of the saints. And the third is to ask for their intercession. If I find the story of a saint, one of my favorite saints is Saint Moses the Strong. I look at his example and I see that he was a murderer and a gang member and he committed all kinds of sins. And yet even he was able to be converted and to become righteous and to become a saint and a monk and a priest. How is it that such a person could convert and change from one to the other if it were not for the power of God working in him? The same power of God that is available to us, that we also would be transformed and to change just like the saints. So we look to these particular saints that have a particular place in our heart because maybe we share with them a certain circumstance or a certain struggle or a certain pain that they had that they overcame. So we look to them as an example and we ask for their intercession and asking that God would grant us the same virtues that they had and to overcome the same obstacles that they did. So of all the saints to study and to look at the life, Saint Mary is the best because she has every virtue you can imagine and she is the most well-known. She has more intimate contact with God than any person. Imagine that God is living physically inside of you, that God is suckling from you, that God is being nourished, His body through you. The kind of intimacy and contact that Saint Mary had with God is far greater than any of us can imagine, than any of us can ever achieve, which is why we say that Saint Mary is higher than the heaven, that she had that such deep and intimate contact with God. Also, when we discuss her virtues again, we don't want to speak about it in a theoretical way. We want to speak about it in a very practical way. How is it that I can attain the same virtues that Saint Mary did? How can I grow closer in holiness the way that she did? So we're going to speak about 10 points of the virtues of Saint Mary. And an important thing to remember is that holiness is tested in the world. Holiness is tested not while we're in the church or when we're standing during the liturgy, but holiness is tested outside when we're doing very normal things, things that are not, we can call them religious, quote unquote. We're not doing religious things. We are living in the world, we're talking to normal people, we are going to our jobs and our schools, and everything about our life seems normal. And yet that is the arena where holiness is tested. This is the place where we can demonstrate virtue or demonstrate passion. It's not in the church itself. The church is where we are trained. The church is where we are taught. But then we go out into the world to apply what it is that we have. So this is why oftentimes when we put on the best faces when we come to church on Sunday so that everyone around us thinks that we are holy and good, this is actually very self-defeating because it is not the church that is the place that we will be judged on what is our actions, what is our words. It's out in the world that we will be judged. Our holiness and our sainthood is determined by the way that we act in the world, not by the way that we act in church. So the first virtue we'll speak about is Saint Mary's purity. When Archangel Gabriel appeared to her and he told her the Annunciation, that she would bear a son and that he would be the Son of the Most High, she responded and said, "How can this be since I do not know a man?" So Saint Mary lived, of course we know that she was an ever virgin. She never knew a man at any time. But the focus here should not be necessarily that the only thing that matters in terms of the eyes of God is pure chastity in terms of never being married. Otherwise, salvation would only be for monks and nuns. We actually are called to be to have a chaste life. Even those who are married are called to chastity. Because even those who are married still are tempted with the lusts of the flesh. And sometimes people think that if they get married, then somehow all the temptations of the flesh, when it comes to sexual temptation, will be somehow removed. Like I will no longer experience them. And maybe people sometimes want to get married for that reason. They want to get married because they feel like this is going to satisfy this temptation of mine and it'll kind of quiet the fire and I will no longer have these temptations. But actually, it is not something that ends. It's something that continues that we have to continue to fight for. Sexual desire is like eating. Once you eat, no matter how hungry you are, once you eat, you become full temporarily and then you become hungry again. So it's something that continues to fight us. Well, God is asking us to learn to be chaste, just the way that Saint Mary was chaste. One of the big temptations that we have when it comes to purity is what we allow ourselves to watch on TV or the internet, the media. It has a very big impact. I was thinking actually that we, by our own hand, by our own will, allow these influences to come into our home. We allow this into our home ourselves. If you remember the miraculous story of the church of St. Abbas Khairun, where the people were locked themselves in the church because there were barbarians on the outside trying to attack them. And they kept praying to God that God would deliver them from this attack. And then suddenly they found that God transported the entire church from one location to the other. A completely different city they were in. God moved in a miracle. He moved the church. But you see how much these people were trying to keep the enemies of God outside of the church, because they saw that they were dangerous and they saw that they were a threat to them. And yet what we do when it comes to our own homes is we open the doors to the barbarians, we open the doors to the enemy, to the demons, and we tell them, come and sit with us, come and dine with us, come and spend your evening with us, because we are welcoming you here in our house. We want to watch you, we want to see you, we want to hear you. Tell us and share with us the things that you do, the evil things that you do. This is what we do when by no force at all we bring all of these ungodly media and things into our homes, and we sit there watching it and consuming it and our children consuming it. Why? And then in the end, who is it that is to blame because of our lack of purity? Who is it to blame? It is ourselves. We are the ones that have allowed that this to happen. We are the ones who allowed us to be open and free to the point where all this can come into our house. So we should be very mindful in controlling the things that we see, the things which we allow ourselves to watch, because this is the doorway into our heart. Once we begin, our eyes start to become corrupted and we become desensitized to sin, these things enter our heart and we lose our purity and we become desensitized to the standard that God expects me to live. Some of us might feel like the standard of chastity that God has called us for, even to have a marriage between just one man and one woman, is something unrealistic. Many people think this is unrealistic. How can I live the whole rest of my life just married to one person only, that I will never leave and be with for the rest of my life? This is because oftentimes our standard has been corrupted by the world. Whereas someone like Saint Mary, who lived in purity and chastity all her life, this for her was the natural state. This is the natural state that she lived. And this is what God is calling us to be chaste in our eyes and chaste in our actions. The second virtue we'll speak about is contemplation. The idea of that we are thinking always and meditating upon the existence of God and seeing the work of God in everything that we do. Sometimes we forget completely that God is with us. We think that God is far away, especially when something that we don't want happens to us. Something that is painful or difficult, something that we didn't want or ask for happens. We begin to forget that God even exists, and we try to take action on our own, or maybe fall into despair and desperation that these things are happening out of my control. But let's look at what St. Mary did. As St. Mary's life was unfolding before her, and things definitely turned out different in her life than she expected, being the mother of God, she could have never imagined that this would happen to her. After the birth of Christ, the shepherds that came to her, they came and visited the child. They visited Christ. And after they were there, it says in Luke 2:19, but Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. She was, you know, we actually read more verses in the Bible about St. Mary pondering and thinking and contemplating than we do about her actually speaking. Very few words in the Bible are actually, we hear the words of St. Mary herself. Very few times does she actually speak in the Bible. But we hear about her and we see her actions. So she has a life of contemplation. She is always thinking about, what is God doing? What does this mean? How can this be? And she is relating it to her relationship with God. Also, after Christ, when he was 12 years old and he was separated from his parents, when they went back to Jerusalem to the temple and found him, it says in Luke 2:51, then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, but his mother kept all these things in her heart. His mother kept all these things in her heart. She kept contemplating and thinking about what these things mean. So the question for us is how much time do we spend in the day thinking about God, versus trying to be distracted by anything possible to fill up every silent moment that we can fill, so that we don't have to hear the sound of silence, so that I won't have to be alone, so that everything we do, I mean, even now, like if you go stand in like the doctor, you go to the doctor's office and you're in the waiting room, it used to be a long time ago that you would just sit there and there was nothing to do. And now we have phones And we have all kinds of gadgets and technology where the first thing we do, even when we're standing in line, any moment of silence, any moment of idleness, we pick up our phones and we start reading the news, or we find something interesting online that we want to see. So all these opportunities that God has given us to think and to meditate and to pray and to contemplate on Him, we have used and replaced it with something else, entertainment. That is the kind of things that we're filling ourselves with. So when we go through our day, are we even thinking about God? Are we aware that God is with us all the time? Are we aware that God is watching us and that He is our judge and that He is asking us to live a holy life that day and in that moment? Or do we think that God only lives in the church, or God only exists during the times where I stand to pray? A lot of times we wonder and ask, how is it that we can pray without ceasing? How is it that we can pray without ceasing? And the answer is that to pray without ceasing is to be aware of the presence of God at all times. To be constantly aware that God is with me right now. I don't go to the monastery to find God. God is here. God is with me at home. God is in school. I go to the monastery or go on a spiritual retreat because I want to remind myself that God is everywhere. Not that God only is limited in a certain area and a certain place. So when we go through our day thinking about God, we have a different focus and a different mindset of what we are doing in life and the kind of purpose that we have for ourselves, rather than when we forget Him. When we forget Him, we begin to feel like we are alone and we're by ourselves, and we busy ourselves with things that are not important because we don't know what else to do. But if we are always aware that God is there, as St. Mary did, then we will begin to see God working more in our life and to be able to hear and listen to God calling us to do something. The third virtue that we'll speak about of St. Mary is her humility. When St. Mary went to visit St. Elizabeth, St. Elizabeth told her, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb." Now, St. Mary knew actually at this time that this is God that is going to be born of her. And actually, again, when St. Elizabeth praised St. Mary, a few verses later, she responded and said, "For he has regarded the lowly state of his maidservant, for behold, henceforth all generations will call me blessed." Do we sometimes forget the honor that St. Mary had, that she actually was the mother of God, that God was born from her, that she was the highest of all creation? She was higher than kings and patriarchs and princes and the prophets and every other saint that came before her or after her, that she is the highest one. And yet, when she is praised, she deflects the praise. When she is praised, she calls herself a lowly maidservant. How many of us would be able to do the same, sincerely believing that we are lowly, when we are picked by God, hand-selected for a very unique mission, different than any other mission ever given to any other person ever in the history of the world? And yet, she maintained her humility in all of this. She was the pinnacle of humanity. Okay? And yet, she takes no honor at all for herself. She doesn't even speak and tell people what is happening to her. For instance, when Joseph realized that she was pregnant, and he sought to put her away quietly, thinking that she became pregnant through normal means, who would have ever imagined that she could be pregnant any other way? And yet, we don't read anywhere that St. Mary went and pleaded with Joseph and told him, "No, actually, an angel appeared to me, and this is the Son of God who is going to be born from me, and please don't put me away." She never even tried to explain, even to Joseph, who was getting ready to act on his misunderstanding, what it is that had happened to her, out of her humility, that she just remained quiet and trusted that God was going to put things right and set things in the way that it should be. How much actually do we do this? How much, when we are praised by someone for something that we do, do we actually and sincerely believe that God is the one who works and not ourselves? And how often do we hide our gifts and hide the good things that are happening to us for the sake of humility? One time when St. Mary was outside a house where Christ was preaching, it says, "Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him calling him. And a multitude was sitting around him, and they said to him, 'Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you.'" So St. Mary came to this house where Christ was inside, and she just waited outside for him. She didn't make like a big fanfare. She didn't come say, "Look, I am the mother of God. Come and make a place for me so that I can come and sit down next to my son." She didn't follow him around everywhere and like wanting to be seen with him. She didn't ask for special privileges because she was the mother of God. In fact, we don't hear of anything. Her life was full of suffering. Her life was full of poverty. She had no special benefits on earth because she was the mother of God. The fourth point we'll speak about is faith, the virtue of faith. Again, Saint Elizabeth praised her, saying, "Blessed is she who believed, for there will be a fulfillment of those things which are told her from the Lord." Blessed is she who believed, for there will be a fulfillment of those things which were told her from the Lord. So Saint Mary is praising her because of her faith. Again, someone might think that I'm hallucinating. Someone might think that there is no way that this can happen, that I would become the mother of God, that God himself would be incarnate as a man, that this is something unheard of. We've heard of people being raised from the dead, we've heard of the blind being, you know, cured, and the lame, and all these things. We've never heard of someone who is giving birth without a man. And we've never heard of God becoming a man. So for her to believe the angel is a very great thing. It's a very amazing thing that she had faith. We doubt God for far simpler things. We doubt God for things that maybe he's already done for us hundreds of times, and then we doubt. For instance, how many times has God provided for us and given us food on the table, and given us clothing, and given us health, and given us, you know, prosperity for our children, and given us so many things? And yet, we sometimes still are afraid and worried, but what about tomorrow? Will God still provide for me tomorrow? Will God still give me tomorrow? Or maybe tomorrow will be different than today. Maybe God will forget me and I won't have the blessings he's given me. Even though God has blessed us all our lives in one area, maybe tomorrow will be different. Here, St. Mary was believing God in something that had never happened ever before. This is a greater miracle than the parting of the Red Sea, than walking on the water, than any miracle you can think of in the Old Testament. There is nothing compared to this. And yet, St. Mary believed immediately. Also, when at the wedding of Cana of Galilee, she demonstrated her faith again. When the wine had run out, she told the people, "Whatever he says to you, do it." She trusted in her son. She trusted in God. She knew that God would act and that he would not leave his people alone, even for something as insignificant as wine at a wedding. She trusted and believed that he would do something. So the question is, do we believe what God has promised to do? Do we believe in what the church is here for? Do we believe in that God will come again and that he will be our judge? Do we believe that God offers us the opportunity to repent and that he actually hears us and forgives us and can restore us again to him? Our whole life depends on faith. A lot of times we are focused too much on proofs and things that prove the existence of God. And yet sometimes no proofs will come. Or people will look at the suffering in the world and conclude, because there is so much suffering, that God doesn't exist. And yet God is asking us to believe on him in faith. Just as St. Mary believed and was rewarded for her faith, we are also called to ask God, to trust in God in faith. We should trust God with the little that we have, that God will continue to provide us more in the future and not start to doubt. We should trust that God will bring us people into our lives that we need at different times in our life. We should trust that God is able to turn us from a sinner into a saint, just as he transformed many saints from sinners into saints. This is the hope that we have in God. This is again why we look at the lives of the saints, because we believe and hope that we can one day be like them. If we don't believe that we can be like them, then our Christian life becomes very frustrating. We feel like we're up against a wall, like we're continued to ask to do things that are difficult for us to do, and then deep inside, we have no faith and do not believe that we can ever attain the goals that we've set for ourselves. If that's the case, then why do we continue to try? Why do we continue to take communion? Why do we continue to come to church? Why do we continue to struggle if we believe that in the end, the goal that God has called us to is unattainable? This is why we have to trust and believe in God. Just as he was able to turn those sinners into saints, he's able to do the same with me. The fifth virtue we'll speak about is prayer. Again, when St. Mary was visiting St. Elizabeth, she prayed, saying, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior." And also we read about her in Acts 1:14, "These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers." So she was a woman of prayer. She was always praying to God. She was always remembering God. And she spoke with God as her own son. This is actually why her intercession is so powerful. Because when she speaks to God, she's speaking to her own son. It is such a familiar and close bond that they have when she speaks to him. And her communication with God kept her strong and resilient to all of the attacks and all the things that were happening around her. Imagine at the time when she was standing at the cross, if she was had been separated from God, or she had lost her faith in God, or she wasn't praying to God, how would she interpret everything that was happening around her during her most difficult times? We are also called to this life of prayer. That again, we don't go through life believing that we are alone or separated or isolated from God, but that God is very close to us, and that we see Him and touch Him and know Him very intimately throughout our lives. But we have to keep up this prayers that we offer to Him. We have to continue to communicate and keep a line of communication open so that God would know us and we would know Him. Sometimes we focus very much on outside, external prayers only. And don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but when it comes to, for instance, prayers like with the Agbaya, it's very important that we pray with the Agbaya. But the prayer with the Agbaya is the beginning of prayer. It's supposed to be the first step in prayer. It's supposed to be that it leads us to deeper prayer with God so that we speak to God also with our own words out of our heart with sincerity. Sometimes what we do is we consider prayer to be just a rule, just something that we have to do to check it off a list that we've prayed today, and we lose the blessing of true communication with God, that we're actually being united with God in our spirits, and that God is with us and we are being reminded of Him all the time. When we begin to pray unceasingly this way, that we are always in the presence of God, we begin to see God in a different light, and we begin to feel the presence of God and feel the love of God throughout our whole day. And it brings joy to our hearts. It brings us joy because God is with us, and that we're not waiting for a specific time of prayer to speak with Him, or we're not waiting to go to the church to speak with Him, but we are joyful because He is with us constantly, all the time, and that we are feeling and knowing Him. This is how St. Mary lived, that her whole life was revolving around God and about prayer. The sixth virtue we'll speak about is obedience. We're all called to be obedient, but many times we wish that we had a certain rank or a certain position that exempted us from being obedient in certain ways. In fact, young people are maybe constantly waiting for the time that they will become adults so they feel like they no longer have to be told what to do by their parents, and they can be free from some kind of obedience that they have to do. And we wish sometimes that we would be the boss, because once I am the boss, I'm the one who tells everybody what to do, and nobody can tell me what to do, and this is the best place to be because I'm the boss. But actually, we forget that regardless of what our rank is, we're all called to be obedient to God, and St. Mary is a perfect example of obedience. How many of us in her position could have felt that we are exempted from obedience in certain ways because we are such a special, unique person? I have a unique rank. I'm the mother of God. How are you telling me to do this? How are you telling me to go and give birth in a stable of animals and to place my child in a manger where animals eat and drink? Shouldn't I have a special status? Why is it that I have to obey? And yet we see St. Mary is always being obedient, and she's always following. So for instance, when it was the time for Christ to be circumcised on the eighth day, according to the Jewish law, we read, "And when 8 days were completed for the circumcision of the child, his name was called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And they went and they circumcised him, just like any other child. Or when it was time to present him to the temple and offer a sacrifice for him, we read, and to offer a sacrifice according to what is in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons, they offered to the temple." Couldn't they have said, and couldn't have St. Mary have said, "Well, I don't need to do this"? Actually, she could have rationalized it and said, "Well, I'm offering to God a sacrifice because God was born. Like, I'm offering God a sacrifice on behalf of God. Like, my child is God, and yet I'm offering a sacrifice for him to God." Does that, like, someone might say that doesn't even make sense. Someone might say, "You know what, I'm exempt from this because of my situation, of my circumstances." Also, she obeyed without argument. When the angel told Joseph, "Take the child and his mother and go and flee to Egypt because Herod wants to kill him." We don't see St. Mary arguing, complaining, asking, saying, "Well, how come he didn't tell me? I'm the mother of God. Why didn't the angel come and tell me? I want to hear it myself, and then I will believe and trust him and I'll do it. But why is he coming to you and telling you and not coming and telling me?" This is a big distance we have to travel. And we have a young child, and who of us would want to go on such a journey with a young child? Yet we see St. Mary's obeying in everything, not complaining in anything, not demanding anything. And God actually wants the same for us. God wants us to obey Him. And sometimes obedience is very difficult because we have to put down our will. We have to say, I want something, but I will not do it. Instead, I will do something else. And we're always looking to when our rank will increase. One day I will grow up and I will be able to move out of my house, and then there will be no one to tell me what to do. Actually, this is the opposite of our attitude. Our attitude should be that as I grow up, I actually am increasing in obedience to God and not decreasing in obedience. And God's obedience often is through the authority that God has placed over us. So I can't say that I'm obedient to God and yet I'm disobedient to my parents, to my boss at work, to the servants in the church, to the priests in the church, to anyone. God has placed those people over me so that I would obey them. And that obedience is for my own good. I can't obey God, who I do not see, if I can't obey the people around me that I do see. How am I going to say that I'm being obedient to God? So St. Mary, again, is a perfect example of obedience. She shows us that she's obedient from the beginning to the end. I mean, even from the moment that she was given to the temple as a child, she had no say in the matter. Other people decided for St. Mary every single step of her life. From the time she was a child to when she left the temple and she was betrothed to Joseph, to the time that Archangel Gabriel came and told her that she would be the mother of God, to everything that happened to her in her entire life, she had zero say, she had zero freedom to do anything, but everything was dictated to her. This is what will happen to you. Do you accept or reject? And she accepted. This is what will happen to you. Do you accept or reject? And she accepted. And she continued to accept up until the very last day of her life. And this is why she is the pure saint that she is. Because she let God's will be done in every situation, in everything in her life, from the very beginning to the very end. This is why she is perfect. And if we would do the same as her, we would also share with her. The seventh virtue we'll speak about is detachment. Detachment. So again, she was the mother of God. And this is the king of the world. This is the prince of life. This is the God of the universe. This is the one who is eternal, is to be born. And instead of needing him to be born in some very special fancy place or to be treated in a special way, she allowed herself to give birth in a manger. Okay? And there was nothing special at all. It was actually probably worse conditions than most other people, even those who are poor, to be giving births in such conditions. And she had nobody with her to help her. She didn't feel like she was lacking anything. She didn't feel like she needed something more than what she was given. She was content with what she had, even though what she had was very little. And some people want to associate themselves with powerful people so that they can become powerful themselves. Sometimes we think if maybe someone is very wealthy or very powerful, if I become their friend, if I become a close associate of theirs, then when I go with them, I will also have the honor that they have. I remember, maybe sometimes if somebody's traveling with Sayyidina, and Sayyidina gets to sit down and have like a special plate of food or something special with him, whoever is traveling with Sayyidina is also going to get the same plate of food because you are like Sayyidina's special guest. And sometimes maybe we look for this. We want to be associated with the rich and the famous and the powerful. We want to ride in their cars. We want to have their influence. We want to be seen with them. We want, because why? Because of selfish reasons, because of what I want for myself. St. Mary had God as her son. And she could have demanded things, not just from earthly people, but even from the heavenly beings, from the angels. Would they not have listened to her? Because she was the mother of God. And she says nothing. She doesn't ask for anything. She never complains about the lot that she has. You know, somebody like Judas spent 3 years with Christ, leeching off of what his ministry was. He was gaining money from the money box, from the donations that people would give. And he associated himself with Christ because it was financially beneficial to him. That's why he was with him. He didn't buy into the mission, he didn't buy into what Christ was doing, but he gained personally from being with someone who was powerful. St. Mary is the very opposite. Okay, she cared only about God, about doing the will of God, about obeying God, and she didn't care about gaining anything for herself. She sacrificed so much, and she was content with so little, and yet she was happy that she was doing the will of God. And so we should ask ourselves this question, are we detached? All the things that we have, if they were taken from us, how would we respond? Will I respond in anger toward God? Of God, why are you allowing this to happen? Why are you taking this away from me? Or are we responding in contentment and saying, God, you have given and you have taken. I am glorifying you and thanking you regardless of whether I have this or not. This is a lesson for us to learn from St. Mary, is her detachment. The eighth virtue we'll look at is service. Despite being pregnant with God in her womb, St. Mary still sacrificed her time to go and serve St. Elizabeth. And we read that Mary remained with her about 3 months and returned to her house. You know, sometimes when we are going through difficult situations, we feel very closed in on ourselves and we don't want to serve anyone and we don't want to do anything and we don't even want to associate with people. And yet here she is, she had an angel come to her and tell her that she is the mother of God, and just for her to figure out or understand what it is that this means, when she was going to live her life celibate and she was going to live her life without any children, and she was going to live her life in peace and quiet, and this is what she was imagining for her life, and yet now suddenly she becomes very much in the spotlight, to where everybody around her is now going to be talking about her, and years and years and years from now people are going to be talking about her. Her life went very differently than what she expected, and yet she continued to serve and she continued to do what she knew was right to do and wasn't consumed and focused only on what was happening to her. And again, she didn't think, you know what, everyone needs to serve me. I am now the special person. I have very special circumstances. People need to serve me. Not I am going to be the one to serve them, even when she was pregnant. There is I read somewhere, somebody said, I love mankind. It's people that I can't stand. It's actually true, because we all will say that we love people. We all say that we love people and we want to serve people. But in the moments that it's tested, when a specific person annoys me or bothers me, or I have something in my own life that's happening, making it difficult to serve, this is the true test of whether I really love people more than I love myself. Because when I'm going through a difficult time, it's very hard for me to serve others. It's very hard for me to come out of my shell and to go out and to serve those who are in need. And instead, I want to focus on healing my own wounds. I want to solve my situation first. I want my life to be settled first. I want my finances to be settled first. I want everything to be settled. And then once it's settled, now I'm able to go out and to serve somebody else. But what St. Mary did was the opposite. Her life was very much in tumult. She had no stability. She was in the middle of something that can't be described. None of us can really comprehend how it is that she felt during those months of her pregnancy. And yet she was still going and going out of her way to serve St. Elizabeth, her cousin. We can see actually why God chose her. Why God chose her out of all people to be his mother. Because of all these virtues that she had, even from before the incarnation. You know, we might say that the virtues of St. Mary came about because of her special and unique contact with the Son of God. But actually all these virtues are manifested in her even before he was born. This is why he chose her. He chose her because of her life of service, because of her love, because of her kindness, of her obedience, all these things. The ninth virtue we'll speak about is her hope. We read about when she was standing at the foot of the cross. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. And if you can imagine, if any of us can actually ever imagine what St. Mary felt like at the foot of the cross, watching her son be tortured. And what is it that she was really thinking? What was going through her mind in the moment? Maybe she remembered all the people that he had healed, that he had cured from different sicknesses, that he had driven demons out of them, all the people that were sick, all the people that he preached to in the streets, all the people that he showed love to. And then maybe she would also think about the Pharisees and how is it that they're the ones that did this to him, and how they're the ones that kept accusing him and attacking him. They're the ones that brought him to trial and to the crucifixion. And maybe she thought about the apostles that were supposed to be his chosen group that all abandoned him. Or maybe she was thinking about Judas, the one who betrayed him. Or maybe she was thinking about Peter, the one who denied him. She had every reason in that moment, as she stood at the foot of the cross, to feel that she was defeated. Just like the apostles did. The apostles all felt that the cross was a moment of all of their defeat. This is why they ran. This is why they felt like their hopes were dashed. That everything they thought was to come was not going to happen. And everything they thought that Jesus was, he was not. And in this moment, their true faith was tested in that, did they have hope in the midst of suffering, in the midst of trials, in the midst of all the darkness that they were in? Did they have hope? St. Mary is the only one out of all of this who remained hopeful. She still believed and knew that the salvation of the world was going to come through Christ, and that this must happen in order for this to come to pass, and that this was all part of the plan of God. She still had hope that even though she felt pain in the moment and she was suffering in the moment and things looked very dark in the moment, that there was still a brighter future ahead, a future even better than what she's already had and what the world has already had. So she wasn't focusing on the negative things going on around her. Of course, it was very painful for her, but she didn't lose hope. She continued to hope in a future that was better, and she believed sincerely that God was still in control of what was happening, that there was nothing outside of the control of God, and she believed in Him. So we are also called to have hope. A lot of times we go through situations that are very bleak and very dismal and very difficult, and it's easy for us to lose hope in God, to feel that if God really loved me, He would not have allowed these things to happen. If God really loved me, where is He now? Where is He? Like the way that Job's wife responded when she said to him, "Curse God and die. You had everything, and now God has taken everything from you. What reason do you even have to live?" And yet Job continued to have hope somehow that God would set things right. And sometimes the hope that we have shouldn't be necessarily associated with God restoring the thing that we've lost or God fixing the problem that we have. The hope we have in God is that God loves us and God is with us and God sees what's happening and has a plan for it. It doesn't mean that the plan will be what we hope it is. It doesn't mean the plan will be that my problem gets solved at the time that I want it to be solved, which is usually immediately. That's not what it means to have hope. To have hope means I trust in God. The person who is allowing this has a plan for this. And even if that plan, even if that issue will never be resolved while I'm still alive, God has allowed it for my salvation. So I have hope that God is working, that God is not idle, that God has not abandoned me. I have hope that God is with me and He is close to me. Just as St. Mary remained hopeful, we also should be hopeful. The last virtue we'll speak about is the virtue of her sacrifice, the sacrifice that she made on behalf of all of us. She sacrificed her entire life for us. She sacrificed everything. She didn't have a moment of entertainment. She didn't have a moment of rest. She didn't have a moment of financial security. She didn't have a moment of anything that we would traditionally see as being a happy and joyful life in order that salvation might come to the rest of the world. Saint Simeon the Elder, he prophesied when Saint Mary brought Christ, the Christ child, to the temple. He prophesied and told her, "Yes, a sword will pierce through your own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed." He told her what was going to happen to her, the kinds of suffering and the kind of sacrifice that she would make, that a sword would pierce through her soul. And of course, we can see that happening when she is watching her son be tortured and crucified. Saint Mary did not look forward to family time or to entertainment or to family life or vacations, or any prominent position, or careers, or even any reward for all the sacrifices that she made. But her reward was simply that she did she obeyed God, she did the will of God. This to her was her reward, that God was with her, that God would be born from her was the greatest reward that she can ever have, and she never complained, and she gave up everything, every moment of her life. She kept nothing for herself, but gave it all up for all of us. Because God had to choose a person whom He would come through. And it had to be a person who was pure and without blemish and someone who was perfect. And maybe God waited for this time because this is when Saint Mary, the chosen one, was to be born. Why didn't God come a year later or 10 years earlier or 100 years later? Maybe it was because Saint Mary, the pure and perfect one to whom He could be born, was born in that time. And He chose her because of her perfection. And so she became for us a mother, just as God is for us a father, and that she sacrificed her whole life for this motherhood. So sometimes we should ask ourselves, what is it that I am sacrificing for God, and how am I choosing to live? Am I living two different lives, one life inside the church and one life outside the church, and that I'm trying to act one way that's pleasing to people here and a different way that pleases people somewhere else? Or am I really trying to sacrifice? Am I trying to sacrifice what is dear to me that is maybe separating me from God because I want to draw closer to Him? Again, this is why we study the saints. This is why we look at the lives of the saints. Because in the end, we want to imitate their life and we want to have a life like theirs. But to have a life like theirs is not an easy thing. We have to give up all these things. Purity, and we have to have purity. We have to be meditating on God. We have to sacrifice. We have to be obedient. We have so many things that are uncomfortable that we would prefer not to have to do, This is the pathway. This is the narrow road that leads us to God. So really the question that we ask ourselves is, do I really want to be with God? I have to come to terms with how far away I am from Him today. I have to come to terms with how corrupted my heart is today and the difficult road that I have to walk in order to draw closer to Him. Because it's easy for us, kind of in a blissful moment of prayer, when we're kind of have our eyes closed and we're thinking about this, it's nice to say, God, I want to be with you. Who of us would not pray this and say, God, I want to be with you? The question is, what are you willing to do to be with Him? What are you willing to do to be like Him? Saint Mary gave up her whole life. She gave up everything. Are we willing to also do the same? Each parent has very high hopes for their children. And God has very high hopes for us. And He wants us to grow up and to become healthy and strong and to grow. And yet we are all born in a state of being far from God. We are born ignorant and in darkness. And God wants to bring each one of us closer and closer to Him. And He gives us the example of the saints so that we could become like them and we could copy their virtues and imitate them and realize and believe that this is truly attainable. For why else would God give us so many years on the earth if not to try to attain as close as we are able to the virtues of the saints so that when He takes us to heaven, we will have the closest place with Him. So if we are really asking God with a sincere heart, God, I want to be with you, again, we ask ourselves, what is it that I will do in order to be with Him? What am I willing to sacrifice to be with Him? So let's resolve to take our spiritual lives very seriously and to know and believe that it is attainable, although difficult. We can do it through the grace of God working in us. And glory be to God forever. Amen.